Hare Krishna. Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
There are many examples given of how we are to utilize those things which are set aside for us by the Lord. This is also explained in Bhagavad Gita. In the beginning, Arjuna decided that he should not fight on the battle of Kurukshetra. This was his own contemplation. Arjuna told the Lord that it was not possible for him to enjoy the kingdom after killing his own kinsmen. This point of view was based on the body because he was thinking that the body was himself, and that his bodily relations or expansions were his brothers, nephews, brothers-in-law, grandfathers, and so on. Therefore, he wanted to satisfy his bodily demands. Bhagavad Gita was spoken by the Lord just to change this view. And at the end, Arjuna agreed to work under the directions of the Lord when he says, Karishye vachanam tava, I shall act according to your word. So in other words, Arjuna is having this point of view that what he's going to get from this endeavor. And so he's not seeing that there's going to be any good results, so he's not interested to be involved. But after hearing from Krishna, then the topic of the Bhagavad Gita changes his viewpoint so he can see how to engage his position in the Lord's service. Right? That's the whole thing that we're getting from the Bhagavad Gita, is how, whatever our situation is, we can engage in the Lord's service. That's important. So it's not that we have our sadhana, you know, we have our occupation, we have our family life, and they're three different things. In Krishna consciousness, all three of them are connected. Because every action can be connected to the Lord. You just have to know the science. Right? So that's the whole point of the Vedic culture. It's not a matter of changing the lifestyle. This is a matter of engaging the lifestyle in the Lord's service. And so, therefore, in engaging our lifestyle in the Lord's service, as we become purified, we find that there are nicer and nicer options. Does that make sense? Right? Just like the Westerners, they're not necessarily vegetarian. So it's not a matter of that they have to become vegetarian to take up Krishna consciousness. No, they have to chant Hare Krishna and become God conscious to take up Krishna consciousness. Right? But in the process sense, they're God conscious. Everything that they're getting is by the grace of the Lord, right? How to utilize those things that are set aside for us by the Lord. So what is their quota? So now their quota there, now it's non-vegetarian. But if they're thanking the Lord for that, then they can also, there they can only thank the Lord. But if it's vegetarian, they can offer it to the Lord. Right? So just, it's a natural progression in the lifestyle. So you're not changing the lifestyle. Right? You're changing the quality of it. Right? We think it's a complete change. No, it's not. People are eating. Eating is the point. What you eat. And then the quality of what you eat. The refinement of the environment in which you eat. You understand? So it's a natural progression. Right? Because the point is everything's coming from God anyway. But it's just that these other things carry such reactions that they're going to be not very useful for your spiritual life. Why bother? You can feed yourself without getting such reactions. Does that make sense? You know, if you can eat one food, it will keep the mind peaceful, everything like that, and you can be God conscious. Well, another food will disturb the mind and have the element of, sending you to hell at the same time. If you have the option between the two, why would you take the one that will give you trouble? But until you understand that, then the point is you chant. Right? Many times devotees think, no, we have to go out and establish people are vegetarian. No, we have to establish them chanting Hare Krishna. Vegetarian follows after that. You know what I'm saying? We take these as the... If you're doing all this, then you're a Hare Krishna. If you're chanting Hare Krishna, you're a Hare Krishna. Like that. These others are therefore what's useful in the lifestyle. So when we speak strongly about the lifestyle, we're only speaking because it's more useful. Right? And out of attachment, then we're not taking up these things. So we're trying to point out the attachment so that we make an intelligent decision. Does this make some sense? Right? Because we're supposed to be in this position. Kadishye vachanam tava. I shall act according to your word. Right? But at the same time, this is the result after so much, after training. So if you find that the person can't do beyond that, then you just be happy with whatever it is. If someone's beginning, you're happy with what it is. As they develop, you try to refine it. If someone's been practicing for many years, then you think. So these comments about that we may make about someone, that's when they've been practicing 20, 30 years and are regressing culturally and then making up a philosophy, why is bona fide to regress? Then we have comments. But otherwise, someone's living whatever lifestyle they're living, what does it matter as long as they're able to connect it to God? You know what I'm saying? But following the tradition gives you more examples of ways to connect things to God. You know what I'm saying? We can brush our teeth you brush your teeth, you go in little circles or, down like this, and you make sure you get and how many times they tell you to brush and all that. You can do that because your dentist said. And then, therefore, you want to keep your teeth healthy so that you still have them to use in Krishna's service, right? Hard to eat prasad if you have no teeth, right? So, like that. So you connect it that way. It's connected. But you can also look at it. The Sanatana Goswami says that you brush your teeth in this particular way. Right? Does that make sense? And so then it's the standards of cleanliness and purity that you're dealing with rather than just health. If you're clean, you'll be healthy, right? Because uncleanliness is a cause of disease. That means if you're clean, you'll be healthy. How many look at it that way? No, healthy if you eat something that tastes bad or take some medicine that tastes bad or do something that you don't like to do, that'll make you healthy. No, being clean, and that'll make you healthy. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. Because you're not clean, therefore then you have to take all these bad tasting medicines and do all these funny things. Does that make sense? So the idea is that it is also another approach that's according to tradition that has a more element of the mode of goodness rather than simply just, I'm worried about my health and so therefore, but the health is engaged in Krishna's service. This is that you're worried about the purity, that maintains the health, because the other one doesn't describe how health works. You know what I'm saying? It works, but it's not as scientific. Does that make sense? Right? So that's the idea is that you refine your lifestyle, connecting it to Krishna. Right? But it's not, that's not the element, that's the important element is the connection to Krishna. It's not the form. The form is as a servant to connecting to Krishna. Now, since we are devotees, naturally we want to offer the best to Krishna. So whatever is the best that we understand and can do in that lifestyle we'll offer. Right? So therefore, to make a philosophy, no, to do something substandard is fine. That's laziness. That's a mode of ignorance. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is what can be done, that's what's expected. More than that can't be done, you don't worry about it. Right? You're traveling in your car, you're driving across country, you're stopping at the, what do you call it? The road stop like that. You go into the bathroom, you have your shoes on. The way the things like that. You don't take off your shoes, wash your feet, do a whole number there. You know, but you understand it's not that clean. It's not ideal. So therefore, understanding that, you're practical in that, okay, when you're going road stop to road stop, you're not taking off your shoes, washing your feet, and doing the whole thing. But when you get home, you wash your feet. You don't think, well, you know, we didn't wash our feet out at the road stop, so we don't need to wash our feet at home. That's okay if your home is as good a standard as a road stop. You understand what I'm saying? So this takes discrimination. This takes intelligence, as Prabhupada was pointing out. It takes, Karma Mimamsa. It takes intelligence to actually follow ritual. So that's the thing, is the Western culture is not as actually, as far as culture goes, is less intelligent. They're intelligent how to make things comfortable. That means how to be good at getting money, how to get control. But as far as actual refinement, not very developed. Right? Because someone who is from a refined background can appreciate ritual. Because their life is based on that. But your common person is not based on ritual. Why? Because they're not that intelligent. Middle class means middle intelligence. Upper class means more intelligence. You understand? At least in the Indian definition. Because you can be high class but not be rich. And you can be very wealthy and not be high class. So in India, class is established by culture, not by money. In the West, then generally they try to do it by money. But those who actually have been established for a long time don't look at it that way. Otherwise, why do you have the term nouveau riche? Nouveau riche means they have the money of the upper class, but don't have the character. Because otherwise they have the character. Why would you call them nouveau riche? Why would you separate them off? Because the nouveau riche don't know how to behave. Does that make sense? So, therefore, the point of culture means intelligence. That's the bottom line. So, for the devotees to be, ambivalent to, I haven't used that one for a while, ambivalent to the culture, that means lack of consciousness. So it means not so intelligent. Or to actually be uncomfortable with it because the life becomes a little more ritualized, that means also less intelligent. We're not used to using the brain in this way. I can use the brain in so many ways, but not to do this. You understand? I can use my brain, you know, is it better to get the Gucci bag or the, you know, Hermes bag? You know, like that kind of thing. Well, this will do this, that will do that. And, you know, what color the car? You know, what color the shoes match with this? Does this match with that? You know, this accessory with this and that and all. That's a lot of intelligence. But when the intelligence goes into the area of purity, cleanliness, you know, culture, that's, we haven't used it that way. So that means as a muscle is not used, when you use it, it hurts. Right? So the same way as when you have to use the intelligence, applying it to the culture, it hurts. Right? Unless you come from a cult background that was everything. You know, everything in the house had a place. It had to be there. There's a way of doing everything. You know, the meal is done like this. The table's set like this. It's served like this. It's eaten like this. These are the conversations you can have. These are the conversations you don't have. There are houses like that in the West. So they won't have any problem with, you know, having ritualizing a meal in Krishna consciousness. You know, but if you're used to just, you know, calling up for pizza and, you know, when the guy rings on the door, you tell him, hey, you know, pizza's here, can you open the door? You know, and that kind of thing like that. And then it's like it's sitting on the table, hey, you want a piece? And all like that. And it drips all over. Oh, God, I'm late. Hey, you know, like this and that. You know, and stuff like that. You know, and then so, you know, there's not a whole lot of ritual there other than the ritual of, you know, where's the phone number for the pizza guy? You know, I always put it here. Why do you take the thing off and throw it away? You know, like that. And then opening the door and paying the guy. And, you know, depending upon you, do you give the guy a tip or not? Or do you try to harass it? Actually, you know, he's 30 seconds late and therefore you're not even going to pay him. You know, and all that kind of stuff. You know, so, you know. So you do have your rituals, but they're not exactly based on culture. Does that make sense? Yeah, unfortunately, these things aren't that far away. Saying them as a joke, but actually it's going on. It's okay. Okay. Does this make sense? So it's a matter of intelligence. So this is what Krishna is doing in Gita. He's developing the intelligence so that you change your point of view. It's not a matter of changing a ritual so it's sentiment, it's dogmatic. It's a viewpoint change. You change the viewpoint, you naturally change what you do. You know what I'm saying? If it means, ritual means it's a method how I can connect everything to the Lord, then ritual's not looked on as dogmatic or sentiment. It's science. That's the whole thing is you have the sciences there, then you have the mood. Right? So you can practice the mood without any form of sentimentalism at all. It's just science. It's just the way it works. You know what I'm saying? You know, you can use your blender nicely without any sentiment. It's just a machine. You just do this and this is what you get. Or at the same time, you could be very appreciative. This was given by this, you know, friend or relative, and so it reminds you of them when you use it. Or, you know, it's so nice that, you know, you have this thing and it's so comfortable to use. All that can be added. But that doesn't mean that the science isn't applied. So the science, you're using the machine, use the science. You're using the material world, use the science. Now, if we have our own attachments on top of that, fine. But it shouldn't get in the way of the science. So this is the science. How to change your viewpoint so that you see things in a way that can be easily made Krishna conscious. Right? Otherwise, it'll just be ritual. And the lifestyle changes on one level. But if anything goes wrong, then it's, you know, right back to wherever you were. You know, and we're looking, it's good if it's back to, you know, mom and apple pie, you know, things like that. You know, it's like, you know, you're looking at, you know, the upside of it like that, you know. But generally, it's not that good. Does it make sense? Right? So it's a viewpoint change. Never think that we wear these clothes because they work the best. You know what I'm saying? If we're taking a standard, like Brahminical standard cleanliness, very prominent element, right? So, if we're talking about cleanliness, how clean are pants? How clean are jeans? Right? What's the standard, how often on a standard do you wash pants? Western set, once a week, that's the standard thing. Shirts maybe twice a week. T-shirts, okay, and underwear, you do those every day. You know, but that's only because your mother insists, but, you know, like that. But the pants are once a week. So that means you're wearing them all day for 1 week. You know what I'm saying? How is that clean? And then we're worried about our health or this or that, so many different things. So the Indian clothes, you can wash them every day. You can wear two sets a day. The standard in India of a cultured person is they wear two sets a day. They put one on in the morning and do their whole day's work. Then when they come back in the evening from their day's work, they take a bath and put on a different set of clothes. How aristocratic is that? Like that. But because that takes intelligence, we can't see that. So we just see it as a botheration. You understand? So we're being taught this very high class, refined lifestyle, and we militate against it. Why? Because we're not high class. Because high class means intelligent. You know, we're not being snooty sitting around, you know, with a little pinky out when they drink their tea. No, that's called East London. You know, we're talking about, you know, actual refinement like that. I hope that wasn't a... That's okay. No offense to the pearly king and queen. And like that, you know, don't want to. Okay? Does this make some sense to what's going on here? Right? It's not... a matter of just sentiment. It's not a matter of ritual. It's a matter of understanding intelligence. Bhagavad Gita is meant to develop intelligence. That's why it's called Buddhi Yoga. If it wasn't, it would be called Bhava Yoga. You know, just the bhav, the mood, what you feel like, that would be the whole thing. No, it's Buddhi Yoga, intelligence. Right? No? Okay. So now Arjuna, by hearing all this, he's changed his point of view. Prabhupada uses that. Here it says the decision, but originally it says point of view, because it comes up later. Just to change this view. Bhagavad Gita was spoken by the Lord just to change this view, right? His decision was because of his point of view. It was based on the body, right? Therefore, he made a particular decision, right? So the essential point is the point of view, right? That created the decision, but it was based on his body. Right, so now he changes the point of view, then he doesn't base it on the body. He bases it on the relationship with Krishna. What's the relationship with Krishna? Does that make sense? Yeah. In this world, the human being is not meant for quarreling like cats and dogs. Men must be intelligent to realize the importance of human life and refuse to act like ordinary animals. A human being should realize the aim of human life. And this direction is given in all Vedic literatures. And the essence is given in Bhagavad Gita. Vedic literature is meant for human beings, not for cats and dogs. Animals can kill other living animals, and there is no question of sin on their part. But if a man kills an animal for the satisfaction of his uncontrolled taste, he must be responsible for breaking the laws of nature. Because everything means, human life means regulation, means that everything you do is for upliftment. That's its purpose. So if that's not what you're doing, then there's always a reaction. That's the whole point. So that means if the man kills the animal, if it's not in connection with sacrifice, then there's a reaction. Right? There'll be sin. So the whole thing is Gita's teaching how everything can be done in you know, how does a human being deal? Because a human life means the responsibility that every action you perform is connected to upliftment, to purification. Right? If you just want to eat, sleep, mate, and defend, the animals are doing a great job of it, right? And there's so many examples, they do a better job than anybody else. So it's like, how much can you eat, but not how much can an elephant eat? Now, there's a connoisseur, right? You know, it's just, you know, they can eat all day, and how much they can eat. Volume, you know, it's like, if you're going to eat, then you might as well eat, you know, like that. So, all these things, sleeping, you know, you can get sleep so much, you know, even if you do it in 12 hours, and after that you feel like, you know, the complete mode of ignorance. But, you know, you did it, okay? But a bear can sleep for 6 months, you know, and get up refreshed. So they're much better at this. You know, plus, then for the other 6 months, they still sleep at night when it's dark. You know, hey, you know, it's like, you know. They're very good at all these kind of things. So what would be the speciality of the human form of life? Other than they can appreciate everything in connection with God. And that then gives a refinement, a development that you don't find in the animal kingdom. Right? As far as the sense gratification, it's no different. Like that. We like to pride ourselves. It's no different. You know what I'm saying? The guy is eating, you know, how you say, he's in some little, you know, run down, basically like a studio in some low end of town, eating, you know, Chinese takeout, right? And then there's some guy on, you know, the Upper West Side, you know, in his penthouse suite because he's been so busy at his job. He's also eating takeout. Is there going to be any difference in the taste? Right? You go up 87 floors, that gives the difference in taste. The air is thinner up there, so it brings out refinement in the taste buds. Is it going to make any difference? No. So that's the point. There's no difference. I think it was once Bhavananda, I think it was asked, well, what about, you know, in the karma, what about the dog? You know, he's down at the Ganga, you know, just a, you know, local dog has no shelter, has no home, you know, and he's eating dead bodies on the side of the Ganga that wash up. And then you have the dog that, you know, he wears, you know, some kind of outfit and he eats at the table, you know, fancy food and all that, you know, in a New York penthouse, you know, apartment. And Prabhupada said to the dog, there's no difference. Dog couldn't care less. It doesn't mean any difference to the dog. Like that. So that's the whole point, is the animal aspect of it, of just the sense of sense object. There is no difference between what the animals are getting, what the humans are getting, what one human and another is getting. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. You know? But what can be a difference is your understanding of this in relationship to the Lord. Right? All those things that you can deal with, that you can refine. You can appreciate the finer elements because they're based on Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Does that make sense? That's something you can do. Otherwise, then, you know, it's like a mosquito can smell your blood from half a mile away. So you can be at the temple and there's a mosquito over here. It can smell you over there. So it's not that we can say, oh, but, you know, what about the guy with the refined? Now, he insures his nose for $1 million, right? Because, you know, he does the, you know, he makes the perfumes for, you know, what's it, Guerlain or something like that, you know. So you got to have a good nose for that, you know. So, but the point is the animals can smell like that also. You know, the guy's so good at hearing pitch and tune. Dogs can hear notes you can't even hear. You know, it's just they don't have a good voice. But otherwise, if you put their hearing ability in and they had a good voice, now you'd have something, you know, like that, you know. Okay. That's it. Like that, what do you call it? The Vienna choir dogs or something. Something like that. Very famous, like that. You know, they only accept Chihuahuas because of their high voice and everything. No St. Bernards or something. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly explained that there are three kinds of activities according to the different modes of nature. The activities of goodness, of passion, and of ignorance. Similarly, there are three kinds of edibles also, edibles in goodness, passion, and ignorance. All this is clearly described, and if we properly utilize the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita, then our whole life will become purified, and ultimately we'll be able to reach the destination which is beyond this material scar. So it means every activity is goodness, passion, ignorance, foodstuffs. Anything you do is controlled by the three modes. Human life is meant to function in the mode of goodness. Like that. Otherwise, we get distracted by passion and ignorance, and then we will never be peaceful, never be satisfied. You can't be. Passion creates unlimited desire. Ignorance just creates problems. And when you combine the two, you know, you have unlimited desires that you can't get and problems at the same time. You know, not good. Like that. So human life is supposed to be in goodness. So by studying Gita, then you can understand how to improve the quality of your life. But that takes discrimination. Remember, intelligence means discrimination. And so to apply that discrimination, that may be painful. But that's why then the process, by chanting Hare Krishna, we get purified, not so painful anymore. Right? Okay. That destination is called the Sanatana sky, the eternal spiritual sky. In this material world, the covered sky, we find that everything is temporary. So you have the eternal sky and you have the covered sky. It comes into being, stays for some time, produces some byproducts, dwindles, and then vanishes. That is the law of the material world. Whether we use as an example this body or a piece of fruit or anything, that is created here has got to be annihilated at the end. I like that. Whether we use this body or a piece of fruit. But beyond this temporary world, there's another world of which we have information. Prasyatasmattu bhavonyo. That world consists of another nature, which is sanatana, eternal. The jiva is also described as sanatana, eternal. Mamai Vamso Jivaloke Jivabhuta Sanatana. And the Lord is also described as Sanatana in the 11th chapter. We have an intimate relationship with the Lord because we are all qualitatively one. The Sanatana Dharma or sky, the Sanatana Supreme Person, and the Sanatana Living Entities, they are on the same qualitative plane. The whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to revive our Sanatana occupation or Sanatana Dharma, which is the eternal occupation of the living entity. Oh, this is interesting. Because here they use the word purpose and probably they use the word target. Because this section is the result of the goal, prayojana. So purpose is kind of technically understanding the goal within sambandha. Right? But target means is actually where you're trying to get to. So they're very similar. They're very close. They're both results. But one is the study of the academic aspect of the results, and the other is actually the emotional drive towards it. Because if you know the purpose of it, that doesn't mean it's inspiration, but if it's your target, it means you're committed to it.
Aren't you speaking about some prayojana within sambandha?
It means the whole thing is here, but we've already had a section before about the purpose. This is the result. Result means prayojana. Because within, then we had the three subject matters. The six subject matters. Okay. So it is that you have the spirit of the Gita, how it should be approached. That's the mood in which you have to have. The purpose of the Gita, what you can gain from that. The subject matter of the Gita and the process of understanding the Gita. So these are all aspects of sambandha, because sambandha has to define itself, abhideya and prayojana. Sambandha has to describe the whole picture. That's why sometimes individuals may mistake that they're talking about purpose and thinking that it's actually prayojana. No, it's within sambandha you have to define the theory of abhideya and prayojana. That's all part of sambandha gyan. Just like Hari Bhakti Vilas is giving all the deity worship. So you can say, well, that's all ritual, so that's abhideya. But it's identified as sambandha. Because it is, what is there? Why you're doing it? What's the background for it? What's the purposes of it? What are the goals you get from it? All this and that. Nectar devotion, that's abhideya. Because you're going to apply that deity worship in your life. The other is explaining deity worship. You understand? It's not applying it, it's explaining how it works. What it is, who's qualified, how it works, so that's all sambandha. Abhideya is your actual application. So here, then the spirit is the proper mood, so that means that you have that element of the, what do you call it? The prajumna aspect, is that you're inspired by it, what's the mood that you have towards it like that. The purpose of the Gita, that will be, they say, you know, what goals can be got by applying the system, what it will do for you, you know, what it actually does. Subject matter, that will be your Shankarshan aspect of it. And the subject matter of the Gita, what actually it is, what is the field that we're dealing with, right? So you have the field, what it can do, what is the mood that you should have in dealing with the field, and then the process for understanding the Gita, how you should go about understanding this. You know, what is the technical points that you must understand it? So those four cover all four aspects of sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. Right? So then the spirit is the prajumna, the purpose of the Gita is sankarshan, the subject matter will be your, purpose will be aniruddha, your subject matter will be sankarshan, your process will be vasudev. But that's all within sambandha. Right. Then, having understood that, now you understand all the aspects of sambandha, abhideya, prayojana. Then, in five, the result of understanding the knowledge presenting, going back to Godhead, that's the ultimate result. Right. And then, six, the abhideya, how to practically apply this knowledge to attain the desired result. Right. So the process that you're describing, then that is still sambandha. But it's dealing with the abhideya, but it's the sambandha aspects of abhideya. then you're going to get into how to practically apply it so you actually get the result. That's Abhidhaya. Does that make sense there? So it's fine points. So Sambandha, Abhidhaya, and Prayojana is also going to happen on the, you take Sambandha, you can divide it into Sambandha, Abhidhaya, and Prayojana. Abhidhaya into that. Into, so each one you can divide. Does that make sense? So it's a fun. That's why we're using this system, because the whole philosophy, culture, anything that you want to deal with can be defined by the Sambandha, Abhidhaya, and Prayojana. Like that. Everything can fit. Because otherwise, sometimes you have a formula. Many things fit into it, but some things don't, because it's for more of a specific application. The Sambandha, Abhidhaya, Prayojana is that formula that everything fits into, regardless. Everything fits into it. Yes?
My Bhaktivinoda would be Sambandha and Nectar Devotion. Abhidhaya, what would be Prayojana, for example?
Shikshastakam. You know, on one level. It depends upon how you take, because generally we don't, it's not, that classification wouldn't be identified that way. You're looking at it that Sanatana Goswami is the is the Sambandha Acharya, and his deity is the Sambandha Adidev. Rupa Goswami is your, your Abhideya Acharya, right? And his deity is the Abhideya Adidev. Now, Madhupanda, his deity is the Prayojana Adidev, but he's not considered the Prayojana Acharya. That's Raghunath Das. Like that. So then the works of Raghunath Das, these kind of things would be, you know, you could say in that way. But this is a generic. It's not that they don't have all of them within each of them. It's just where the emphasis is. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, is that your different formulas, they have certain applications. So Sambandha, Abhidhaya, Prayojana, that is the broadest category. Everything can fit in there. But these others, depending, like I and mine. I is Sambandha, mine is Prayojana. Right? Does that make sense? Male, female. So masculine is Sambandha, female is Prayojana. Like that. Control and enjoyment. Control is Sambandha, enjoyment is Prayojana. Like that. Envy and attachment. Envy is Sambandha, attachment is Prayojana. Right? So they fit into that, but themselves, it's a particular perspective that you're using. Vichara means to look at things from different perspectives. So these different perspectives give you a broader understanding of something. Right, because you take I and mine, but mine is also attachment. Right, mine is the feminine principle, because the attachment is dependent upon the masculine principle. Unless it's yours, you know, how can you then therefore identify with it? It means unless you've identified with it, how can you actually get any taste out of it? How can you enjoy it? How can you claim it? You know what I'm saying? Because you say I, it's just that is the position. But mine, that's actually you're emotionally involved. You know what I'm saying? Because then the moon is Aniruddha is the lord of Prayojana. He's also the lord of the moon. Moon controls the mind. You know what I'm saying? So therefore you could say mind is Prayojana. And intelligence, then you find it both in Sambandha and Abhidhaya. Like this, so yes.
I didn't understand how envy and attachment.
Envy. What is your envy? Is in the position of Sambandha. Why are you in the material world? Envy. Because your identity is I am separate from God. So it's the basis of your identity. You know, that I am the controller and enjoyer, that identity's come from envy. Otherwise, God already is that. Why we would have a problem with it? Does that make sense? So in other words, Bhagavad Gita is, that's why he's saying, Prabhupada's saying it's the complete science. of philosophy, because all the technical points are there, all the fine points. There's no point that's left out. It just may not be brought to the front as a major discussion, right? But it's all the technical points are all represented. There's nothing that's not represented in the Gita. We are temporally engaged. Oh, okay. Okay, we're temporally engaged. In other words, now we're temporarily engaged because of a temporary identification. But if we change that identification so that our point of view is that we are eternal, then we take up eternal occupation. Right? Because God's eternal, the spiritual realm is eternal, the jiva is eternal. The only question is this karma. The karma is not eternal. So when karma is engaged in the Lord's service, then it becomes sanatana dharma. Right? So then one's acting on the eternal platform. So that's the idea. How to take everything that we have and connect it spiritually. You know, so it's eternal. So that's what we're trying to establish. That is called our pure life. Right? Because you're trying to purify your life. Human existence for purification. Right, that's why they take baths and do things, brush your teeth. Animals don't bother with that, you know, that they don't do. Bird bath, okay. But Supreme Lord in His transcendental abode, which is beyond the spiritual sky, are both sanatana, as are the living entities. Right. So now he's pointed out that there's a spiritual sky and the material sky, but it's just a matter of one's eternal and one's temporary. We're eternal. The Lord's eternal. So you've established all the different realms, right, and their position. Now he's saying that about the abode is beyond the spiritual sky. You understand? So his abodes are situated in the spiritual sky. Right? Just like the universes are situated in the material sky. Does that make sense? Like that. So the idea is that one sees beyond spiritual, there's spiritual, then there's the personal aspect. Right? Because Brahman understanding, Paramatma understanding are spiritual. Right? They have, you know, they're there because of the material particular perspective. Right? Because otherwise in the spiritual world you don't worry about that. But it's spiritual. So you have to distinguish between that and the Lord as a person who you have a personal relationship with. Right now we're just establishing eternality. Right? So beyond eternality, then there's the personal relationship with the Lord. Does that make sense? So it's a fine point. It means they're synonymous, but at the same time there is a difference. That's why sometimes it can be described as one thing. So we can say the spiritual sky, then that includes the planets, but at the same time as it can just refer to the sky in which the planets are situated. But when we say the spiritual world, then that means that includes the spiritual sky. You know what I'm saying? Does this make sense? Why we make this distinction? Because otherwise in your own life, you've spiritualized something, then there's Krishna as a person. Right, as we mentioned before, is you start wherever you are in your lifestyle. That doesn't matter. You start chanting, you start seeing things in connection to the Lord. Then, as we become purified, then we are naturally going to, you know, as we come more to the mode of goodness, try to engage on that platform. That will then bring about situation in goodness. Right? And seeing those from the transcendental viewpoint, that will situate us transcendentally. And so now we're nicely situated transcendentally. Everything we see in a spiritual viewpoint. Everything's in the mode of goodness. Everything's pure. All right? And, you know, you're seeing it in relation because God is the creator. He's done all these things. He's the potencies and all that that's at work here. All right? Now, one might think that that's nicely situated. It is. Good. It means you're not materially situated, so it's good. But what about doing this whole process for God as a person? Right? Because right now, if we look at it, why have we done this? For ourselves. Because we're in passionate ignorance, we suffer. We're in goodness, we don't suffer. We're situated in the transcendental platform, we suffer even less. Right? Then there's no suffering. Then we're happy. It's comfortable. Now, what about God? So that's why Rupa Goswami makes the distinction that being conscious, then being God conscious, then being favorable in that God consciousness. And then once one is favorable, there's still another step in which, you know, your desires for karma and jnana aren't there. So in that one verse, we think he's just saying, okay, be God conscious. No, he's giving steps. First become conscious, then God conscious, then favorable towards God consciousness, and then bring it to the point where it's selfless. Right? Because otherwise, we have by duty been selfless to get ourselves on the platform of spiritual. Right? You have to work on the platform of naishkarmya if you're going to get to the liberated platform, if you're going to get to the spiritual platform. Without naishkarmya, you won't get there. Right? But that's as a duty, as a form of action. But it doesn't mean that behind the scenes, your mood is that you're doing selfless work for your own purpose. You know what I'm saying? You do selfless work, you feed the people and all that, but it makes you feel good. So you actually are doing it because you feel good. But you'll only feel good if you do selfless work. You understand? So the form of it is selfless, but ultimately the consciousness is not. So Rupa Goswami, we're already, what do we say, be conscious. You have to be conscious, you have to perform your duty, it has to be selfless. So that's just the way it has to work. That's just, you know, you open the top, you put in the clothes, right? If the clothes don't go in the washing machine, they don't get washed. You know, like that. Very fundamental point. Then the soap has to go in. Then you have to close the top. You don't close the top, you have a mess. Like that. Then you have to turn the machine on. Now you have to make sure that funny little cord going out of the machine with all the little prongs on is plugged into the wall. Right? If that's not plugged into the wall, it's not going to work. So all that has to be done. It's not a matter of, well, I don't like to plug things in. You know, why do we have to go so much trouble? You know, why can't I just, you know, push the button and why make it so difficult? Like that. You know, you'd say the person's got a problem. But, you know, if you just replace washing machine with Vedic culture, then it's a matter of, no, but you have to understand. And, you know, it's like this. So it changes. It's the same stupidity, but hey. So, this whole process is just the way it is. Sorry. You have to be conscious. You have to know your duty. You have to perform it in a selfless fashion. Only then you'll get good material results and good spiritual results. Now, doing that, you can do that and be a very pious person. There's millions of them that do this. We think it's so hard, can't be done in Kali Yuga. There's people doing it right now. There's tons of Samarthas in India. They are following, they're doing. Like that. You know, because they know, this will get me better material results. So they're doing it. But then you have to be conscious of God. Then it comes into the realm of devotional service. The other one is you're conscious, then it's at least proper human life. Human beings are God conscious. Animals aren't. So unless you're human, it's very hard to become God conscious. You can't, animals have done it, but how many do you know? Right? Shiva descends dog. Right, that, you know, okay, those fish that were in the pond when Ramanuja threw the prasad, you know, any other ones. The dog looked, oh no, that was Shivananda Sen's dog. Gajendra. Yeah, the little puppy, Lord Chaitanya. But now in all these, you notice that unless God himself or his great acharya has, you know, come in contact, we don't find any other stories. Right? You understand? So it's very limited. So it wouldn't be taken as the ideal. Well, I'll just do whatever I do, become an animal, and then Lord Chaitanya will come and play with me as a puppy next. What if you're in the wrong village? You know? What if you're not pious enough that you're cute enough that the Lord would want to play with you? You know? What if you have fleas? You know, it's like that. So then, you know, you've got a problem. You understand? So it wouldn't be a good... It wouldn't be a good process. It wouldn't be a well-thought-out process to go back to Godhead. Therefore, human means conscious that they can be God conscious. So first become conscious means become a human being, follow human culture. Then within that, become God conscious. Being God conscious, then you're, okay, God's there, but so many of the Vedic philosophies, they're God conscious. But they're not worried about God. They know He's the Supreme, He's eternal, He's beyond everything. He makes everything happen in the world according to your desire and your karma. And they accept that, He's the Supreme. But they have no interest in having a relationship with Him. So they're conscious. Like that. Then become God conscious. Then become favorable in your God consciousness. Excuse me. All right? That it's actually for His pleasure. And now if it's for His pleasure, you can be doing it for His pleasure and your pleasure. But now as you're doing it for His pleasure with nothing else, that's pure unalloyed devotional service. Right? Otherwise, you're doing it just like the residents of Vaikuntha. They're working for Krishna's pleasure, but they're also very happy to be freed from material contamination, be on the liberated platform. Yes.
So, Kamsa was also God conscious.
He's God conscious, yes. Kamsa is God conscious. So many are God conscious in a very intense way, yes.
Many demons are God conscious?
Yes, that's why it's said that it has to be favorable. So here we're taking it from material to spiritual. Now, at this point, he says now, that his transcendental abode, which is beyond the spiritual sky, are both sanatana. Right? So he's pointing out, now you have to go beyond that. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. Otherwise, we make it very simplistic. Our life is very sophisticated, but we make the philosophy in Krishna consciousness very simplistic. No, it's very sophisticated. But because it's based on principles, it's very simple. That's the thing. Vedic sophisticated doesn't mean complicated. Sophisticated still means simple. Just refined. Yes? Okay. So we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Janita Gaur Premanandi.